we're limited in our, as we evolve, we are still limited. We're still, emotional people. We're still, learning how to think separately. But because we have these limitations, I think beliefs actually have a role to play. They're tools in gradually learning what the truth is behind those beliefs.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Planetary Makeover. Today, for the first time, we're pleased and privileged to be interviewing Anne Finneran from Share International on Planetary Makeover. Now, before we get into introducing Anne, let's just talk about what we always try to achieve here at Planetary Makeover. As always, we're not here to convince you of anything. And all we ask is that you consider viewing and listening with an open mind, to consider that mankind can create a new civilization and world based on sharing, trust, justice, equality, brotherhood, peace, synthesis, and love, keeping the best of the old while adding the best of the new. Now, to accomplish this seemingly impossible task, we assert and we demonstrate that humanity is not alone. We have help of an extraordinary kind, which will inspire us to transform these seemingly impossible futures into reality. And how, you must be asking yourself, are we going to do that? Well, mankind's elder brothers are returning to the everyday world after a 98,000 year absence. The world teacher for all of humanity, a spiritual teacher, not a religious figure, is coming with his group, the Masters of Wisdom. They are teachers in the broadest sense of the word. Now, of course, this teacher had been predicted by all the major religions for thousands of years. To give you some examples, for the Jews, that would be the Messiah. For the Muslims, it'd be the Imam Mahdi, depending on the sect, or the Messiah. For the Hindus, it's the Kalki Avatar. For the Christians, it's the Christ. And for the Buddhists, it's Maitreya. They got the name right, though Maitreya is non-denominational. He's not Buddhist, Christian, Hindu, or any other religion. As I said, he's a spiritual teacher in the broadest sense for everyone. Maitreya and the masters are here for the people, not for religious, governmental, or philosophical institutions. And to boot, this is considered the most important event in mankind's history. Though, of course, we will let you judge for yourself. The masters love everyone unconditionally. Everyone from the most ardent fundamentalists to the most dyed-in-the-wool atheists and agnostics. They don't need for you, and they don't want you to believe in them or follow them. And they're not here to found any kind of new religion. Part of the reason they're so effective is because Maitreya, for example, is an avatar himself, wielding energies and combinations that have never been seen on the planet before. This, in part, is because he, in turn, is overshadowed by the avatar of peace and equilibrium, of synthesis, and of a third energy for which we have no name, at least not in English. It could be interpreted as unstoppable will, though that's a wholly inadequate definition. Now, you may ask why they're here. Well, of course, we're at a crisis point, for one thing. But aside from that, we are entering a new age, the age of Aquarius, and the masters are helping humanity and the planet enter this new age. They happen about every 2,150 years. So if you thought it was just a pop song from the 60s, no, we're just getting warmed up here. We're leaving the age of Pisces, which has been in effect for the last 2,150 years and was inaugurated by the historical figure we know of as Jesus, who is now the Master Jesus. Writings about Maitreya and the Master's wisdom, as well as their own writings, are meant to stimulate our minds and enhance our intuition. Just reading or listening to it is transformative in a way that doesn't interfere with our free will, which is sacrosanct to the Masters. This subject, vast in scope, includes more than just the Master's wisdom, if you think, for instance, Krishnamurti, and is known collectively as the Ageless Wisdom Teaching. And as I mentioned, some of the other teachers it includes who were overshadowed by the Masters include Madame Blavatsky, Helena Rodrick, and Alice Bailey. Most recently, author, artist, and esotericist Benjamin Krem. Now, let's get back to the subject at hand. And that would be our guest, Anne Finneran, who is here to talk about whether or not we believe that the world teacher Maitreya is emerging. Now, just a little bit about Anne. She's an environmental activist, an artist, mother, and wife, and a longtime student of the Ageless Wisdom Teaching and a co-worker at Share International, where I met her years ago. And we hope to have more appearances by Anne on Planetary Makeover going forward. So welcome, Anne. Welcome to Planetary Makeover.
Thank you, David.
So glad you're here. And thank you for agreeing to take time out of your crowded schedule to speak with us, seeing as how I know you have other speaking engagements this week.
I do.
Indeed. Well, some of the questions that we had come up with that we thought you'd find intriguing and interesting involved this very subject of belief and the emergence. And before we launch into that, just in brief, say 2 minutes or so we can listen to you answer all those wonderful questions with your vast knowledge on this subject. How did you come to this work and get involved, and what keeps you here?
Well, in 1981, in the late summer, I started having these funny little experiences, like a dream, and then a conversation, and then another conversation, and they were all kind of little aha moments that I had. And then on December 19th, I met a couple who in Buffalo, I was living in Buffalo at the time, and it was in an art opening. I had a piece there, and I met this couple there, and they were involved in this story. And so I went to their house. They invited me over, and we were up talking until 4 a.m.
Wow.
And they told me about Maitreya and that the Christ was in the world, and the experience of their story just pulled everything that I've been going through the last few months together. And, you know, I just like the floodgates opened. I was weeping. My heart was just filled. And that was how I heard about it. A couple of weeks later, Benjamin Krem came to town. He was touring at that time. And I took part in meditation with him and had further experiences, and it was just a profound time in my life, very life-changing. And that was pretty much it. So that was how I got started. And that whole set of experiences, which it's a story in and of itself, just kind of is set in stone. My understanding of this information, and it's more than belief, you know, I'm just totally convinced. So.
All right, Anne, now that we know how you got here, let's find out, let's mine some of the information and the wisdom that you've garnered it over this time. So my first question in that regard was, going back to the subject of this show, in this, the Age of Aquarius, how does belief stack up against knowledge, and why?
Okay, well, the age of Pisces is a was about belief and about adhering to a guru or following a following someone or, and it was completely about beliefs. Pisces is a water sign, so it's an emotional sign. Aquarius is an air sign, which is more to do with mental. So belief is not part of it. Aquarians are about knowledge and about self-awareness. They're thinking for themselves. They're not they because they think for themselves, they're not dictated by governments, religions, political, philosophical thought. But they also think in terms of group knowledge. So there's a little bit of group involved in that, but they are totally not really into believing as an emotional thing, but as a knowing as a mental a thing.
That's great. Sounds like it'll be a relief to humanity to have this new incoming energy. So, speaking of humanity, how do you think conservative Christians will react to Maitreya as the world teacher and to the reappearance of Master Jesus? What do you think they'll believe about each of those figures?
Well, it kind of depends on their level of understanding, on their own personal intuition, I think. But some may see Jesus as the Christ. They might recognize him as who they believe to be the Christ, and Maitreya is like his lieutenant. Some might just be totally resistant and go to all kinds of imaginations about who Maitreya is. Their beliefs will be just completely challenged and shaken to the core. They might hate the idea of Maitreya as the world teacher and not as the world savior who's coming to pull them up into heaven while the rest of us stay behind. And so the cherished beliefs die hard and hurt bitterly in the process is something that Maitreya himself has said. Some of them might, if they are open and if they are truly Christian, their hearts might open and they may recognize him outright. But because religion is such a what's the term? Conditioning thing, they may be so fully conditioned in their religion that they won't be able to reinterpret their beliefs into the actual truth and might feel challenged by it.
It should be exciting to witness. And if they can make a change and adapt to this, things may change rather quickly. So, how are a, would you say, and how are a belief in God or a belief in atheism paradoxically similar?
Well, they're both beliefs. They're both based on emotional conditioning, and they're both glamours. I think a glamour is taking a truth and to the extreme, so that they only see it in one perspective and not staying open to the whole realm of possibilities. So they, if the solution to that might be to recognize that we're all humans, that we all are valuable, that we're all divine, although an atheist might not see it in those terms. I think there's an infinitesimally, that is to say, a non-existent line between the idea of God being everywhere and there being no God. Because if God is everywhere, God exists in every single, from the lowest subatomic particle up to the quasars. So there's like really there's no and an atheist would acknowledge the energy in subatomic particles and the energy in quasars and maybe not recognize that there's a consciousness there that is what we would think of as God.
So they're both at a
I
different
had
extreme.
a an experience when I was working in New York a long time ago, there was an artist that came in. It was a frame shop, and there was an artist that came in to do framing. He was got a job there, and he was a paint. He did these beautiful paintings, simple paintings of people in good people in kind of almost naive, but really like Rousseau type of settings. And he was a Calvinist. That was his religion. He came, I think, from Michigan. And he was really, he had this energy. He was steeped in this religious energy. You know, I just melted.
And what is that, Anne? What is what was his background? You said Calvinist. What is that?
Calvinist is it's like Lutheranism. It was one of the earliest Protestant religions after the Reformation. But it in and of itself became very rigid and very caught up in just, you know, the Bible and what the Bible says. And that's where he was. So, but he would talk to me. I could talk to him about my beliefs and about the masters and everything. And he thought I was doomed to hell, but he still maintained that relationship with me. In fact, at one point he said, you know, I have friends who are very, you know, think along the lines that you think. And I wish I could think that way, but I just can't. Mm. He was so conditioned.
But he was self-aware that he was conditioned. That's good.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So, you know, you kind of wonder where this man is now, what his thinking has been, and how he would actually respond to when the emergence happens, what his reaction will be. I'd be very curious.
And it's interesting how people like that tell us we're going to hell. Krishnamurti referred to that as hell, as the fruit of Christianity. And according to Maitreya and the masters, there is no hell. So I guess you're safe for now, Anne.
I expect so. I think I am.
Well,
Jesus loves me. I know that.
And he's not the only one. That's right. So going on with that theme, what role do you think Maitreya will play in helping us clear up the current confusion concerning beliefs, kind that you were just referring to? And how will he help provide clarity?
Well, I think he'll draw on people, on humanity. I mean, I think the fact that our heart is linked to his, everyone's heart is linked to his. And I think he'll cut through and expose beliefs on various things, various human concerns, such as the environment, what we're doing to the planet. I think he'll show that in order to be truly human, we have to take care of each other, take care of the planet, take care of the ecology. Mm-hmm. His priorities and with social and economic and political matters will help counter those beliefs. People will say, "Yeah, if they somehow," I think hopefully they'll tie in with the fact that I was hungry and you fed me.
Yes.
I was homeless and you sheltered me. You know, mm-hmm. I was in prison and, you know, you came to comfort me.
They'll make the connection.
Yeah. And also, I think that the Master Jesus himself is one of the roles he has to play will be to help bridge the beliefs of the Christian religions, at least with the true reality of the times.
Yes, and help clear up that corruption that's crept in over the last 2,000 years.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the masters, my next question would be, are we the same as Maitreya or not? How and why?
Yes, we're the same because we're humans. We're on the same path. We're just much farther behind on the path. That's how I see it than he is. He has gone through so many more experiences and understands so many of the human experiences that we have yet to process and to go through. So, but as far as our divinity, we're all one divinity. We're all, each one of us is endowed with a link to the over arching godness, if you will. And he knows he's divine. He's aware of his divinity more than we are. We allow the conditioning in our lives, we allow all the little factors to interfere with our remembering, I think, mm-hmm. who we really are, our divine selves.
Well, he's fully self-aware. Like, we're in kindergarten and he's in grad school or working on his PhD.
I think he's the professor.
Yes.
We're still in kindergarten and he's a professor. And but he's wise enough, I think, and brilliant enough to know how to communicate to we children. There one time I asked a question at a lecture that Benjamin Krem gave, and it was, there's a line in John, and it was very interesting that it came that I went to mass with my father after telling him about this story, and this reading was presented at the mass, and it was, now we are children, what we will later be has not yet come to light, but later we will know that we are like him, for we will see him as he truly is. Mm-hmm. And you know, my father and I exchanged knowing glances. He recognized that was pertaining to our conversation. And
you mean you had talked to him about Maitreya?
I had talked to him about Maitreya the night before, and I went to mass with him the next day. And my father had studied comparative religions in college, and he traveled the world as an engineer consultant, and he went to Thailand a lot. And he was very familiar with Buddhist thought because the Thais tend to be Buddhist, and he just thought, he said, "Well, Anne, I think you're Buddhist," and he was okay with that, and that was his thinking, you know.
That's great. Well, perhaps in a recent past lifetime. And yes. we should also let our viewers and listeners know that Benjamin Krem, who's a esotericist, artist, and author, had developed a one-on-one telepathic link-up with one of the Masters of Wisdom over a several-year period, so that when we, meaning people like Anne and I, and other interested parties, went to his talks, he would at one point be overshadowed either by his master or Treya, perhaps both, and he would give readings, he would answer questions, and we would be getting a glimpse into the world of Maitreya and the masters and the way they think. So moving right along with that, I wanted to speak to all of the disastrous thinking that some people have. It's like they're disaster drama queens. Where do all these disaster scenarios and destructive thought forms or imaginings come from? Why do people believe in these end of the world scenarios?
Well, they're fear-based, and I believe that fear is, I mean, there are certainly things going on in the world right now that we need to be concerned about, and they're real. And I think that fear doesn't really play into that reality and being practical about how we address certain things going on. Is real, but a lot of what the problem is when people feed that with fear, and feed that with ideas that this is the end of the world and we're doomed and we're all going to hell and things will happen that we are, it's all in the Bible and we need to expect it, and so there are individuals who have are in whose task is their They're actually very highly evolved, and their task is to uphold the material aspect of the world.
Yep, it's a
But
whole group.
they're a little greedy, and
Yep.
they want to take over, they want to control humanity, and they do that using fear. And
Yes.
so
And they're specifically referred to as the Lords of Materiality. They,
right.
we may want to inform our listeners that they work on the path of involution, kind of involution as opposed to evolution, as we do with the masters. Their job is to uphold the physical aspect of matter, but they never seem to be satisfied with that. And when they cross that threshold, they would be what we would refer to as euphemistically as the forces of evil.
Right, or the devil, or evil incarnate. And it's not that, it's just that they are, it's out of balance. They have a role to play to uphold the physical and material planes, but not to go, not to let that overlap into the higher spiritual realms.
And bearing all this in mind, just to wrap up, this would be my last question, since it appears we only have about a minute left. What can we do if we believe all of this, Anne?
Well, I don't know if I like to think, I mean, I do believe it, but I also, it goes beyond belief for me. But we should just speak to people where they are coming from. If we understand their beliefs and we can bridge that with the truth somehow, keep it simple, just maybe present it as a story for their consideration, that you consider it a true story. And if it rings true with them, then they should pass on the information to others. And I think with a smile and with our own inspiration in this information, we can become infectious. That inspiration can be infectious, and it can lift the hopes of all of us. And that's, I think, the way to do it.
And that would be the goal of our show. And hopefully, Anne, you have helped push forward that goal for us and made it within reach of even
I
more of
hope
the
so.
audience.
That's one of my hopes. Thank you, David,
You're
for the
welcome. And
opportunity.
oh, certainly, you're welcome. Thank you for visiting us. We just want to be sure and remind everyone to follow us on Facebook at hashtag Planetary Makeover and at the website planetarymakeover.org. So thanks again, Anne, and we'll
Yeah.
see you here hopefully on Planetary Makeover again soon.
Now another interview, Freedom from Fear, the Divine Purpose Guiding Us.
In response to the heartfelt voices of an awakening humanity, we have evidence that divine help is at hand to work with us to create a hopeful future.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Planetary Makeover, creating a world that works for everyone. Today, we're delving into one of humanity's greatest bugaboo, fear. And we're going to discuss its origins, what it's been like passing through it, and how ultimately we can overcome it. Because these crises throughout the world that we're experiencing now are part and parcel of that fear, obviously. And what it actually is a great spiritual crisis for humanity. Luckily for us, we have help of an extraordinary kind, which you've heard me talk about before. And today we have some earthly help, also of an extraordinary kind, my guest, Ron Leggett. Hello, Ron.
Hello, David.
And I just want to tell you a little bit about Ron before he gets started. He has been studying metaphysical science for over half a century. And during that time, he helped start one of the largest metaphysical centers in the country, founded a metaphysical church, has lectured at theosophical societies, and has been covered by local print, media, and radio. But the most extraordinary part of the bio is something that Ron said to me, and I quote, Ron feels that the understanding the larger context of the changes occurring since the 60s will help us to appreciate the, and this is the real quote, divine purpose guiding this process. Remember that, the divine purpose guiding this process. And Ron, I'd like you to chime in and break that down for us.
Well, we tend to think just of our own lives or the lives of our families or nations or groups. We forget so often that we're part of a larger whole, a vast, complete whole, not only of all of humanity, but of a solar system, of a galaxy. We're part of a greater wheel within a wheel. And so as we open to that idea and start to feel it more in our lives, we can sense, my God, there is a purpose to all this. There is a plan. And if there's a greater plan, maybe there's a lesser plan that includes me and my friends. And maybe we're all part of this. And so gradually, this divine purpose, because again, everything takes time and takes a gentle change, nothing radical. We start to see pieces of the plan and maybe how we can fit in. And we were told, well, the two pillars are meditation and service. Meditation hooks us up to our soul, which knows the plan and is practicing the plan. And service connects us to humanity. So we then see the plan in action, acting out. And that opens our hearts.
And the meditation opens our hands. Just quickly, I just wanted to ask, how does that meditation translate into physical plane augmentation and enhancement of our lives?
Well, by many ways, one is the most, sometimes the simplest, is just having a spiritual experience, which by definition is an expansive experience. We're going to talk a lot today, David, about contraction and expansion, because that's, and we're talking about waves and cycles. So the meditation on one level is creating an actual link to the higher realms, like a channel or a bridge, however you want to visualize it, to our higher chakras, to the higher realms above it, to our guides, to the masters, etc. And so as we connect to that, and the soul is able then to get through to us on a deeper level, because again, the soul isn't about our personality, it's about expressing the qualities of God in this world through whatever ways we can, in our limited little ways, express those, whether it's through art or science or whatever it is. So that's, it's this gradual process.
Ah, so let me see if I understand. So the soul, Ron, is sort of downloading its information into the physical brain and body.
Yes, that's a process. It takes many lifetimes. And that's what we call people who are more enlightened, soul infused, less personality, less density, and greater light. You can see it in their auras. You can see it in their teachings.
Fascinating. I want to be one of those persons. So go on, Ron, and tell us how we achieve all this.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about Pisces and Aquarius, because this is really the critical point of shifting. And the Piscean was pretty much all about the personality and the individual, my meditation, my path, my way forward. And the Aquarian energy said, well, that's great, but you're really part of a group, and there's a group path, there's a group way forward. And meditation, a lot of us, as you know, David, use transmission meditation, but there's other types of meditation to make that group connection stronger so we feel connected. In the Buddhist tradition, they talk about the Sangha, the community. You need others meditating with you. You need others that are still have the same desire to expand and grow and learn and to connect. Because again, it doesn't mean much if we don't feel it. And that's what we'll talk about a little bit too, about the feeling level of what meditation can do. And we all know what the feeling level of what service can do. Anyone involved with volunteering understands that already.
Fascinating. Well, also a little bit more before we go on about how the divine purpose, as you so aptly put it, is guiding this process. Could you talk about that a little more?
It would seem through the researches and experiences that many of us have that our elder brothers, which we call the Masters of Wisdom or the Great White Brotherhood, whatever we call them, because their vision of the plan is clearer than ours. It's more distinct. And they have, for whatever reasons, decided to serve that plan. That's their focus. That's their energy. And since we look up to them, we're connected to them in some ways, we're definitely connected to our souls, which are, again, are serving this plan, that it gives us that aspiration. So, okay, well, there seems to be a plan. All these higher beings are following it. How can we get more involved ourselves to do this? And, you know, part of it, of course, is study to learn more context about the spiritual process, meditation to have more experience about the spiritual context, and service to reach out and be able to touch our fellow men who are also going through the process of demonstrating the plan of God. Right now, obviously, very imperfectly, but that's what the New Age is promising. Yes, it's been rough. There's a transition period. It looks bleak, but we're getting to the point where all of us, again, guided by the masters, the world teacher, which we'll talk about, Maitreya, will say, here's the plan. Here's your part in it. Here's what you can do. And this will give us a hope. It'll give us a vision. It'll give us a purpose. It'll dispel depression and fear. We'll just take this huge leap forward. So that's kind of what we're hoping for.
That's wonderful. So how nice for us. We're getting a masterclass, not to make a bad pun, by humanity's elder brothers, the Masters of Wisdom. Think of what that would do for people if everyone realized we had this guiding, driving force behind us and that we weren't alone. And I wanted to ask, what separates, just briefly, what separates us from them? And can we eventually become one of them too? Or are they in an elite group that we can never hope to join?
It's the vast stairway to heaven. It's the spiral of evolution. We are all somewhere on this great spiral, slowly working our way up. Whether we're individuals or dogs or cats or planets or even the masters, we are all on this spiral. We're all learning, we're growing, we're teaching, we're studying, we're sharing. We're doing this together, and slowly, slowly we move forward so that one day then we become the masters and the people that are around us become co-creators with us. You can see it happening now, the beginnings of this. People are getting more aware of themselves as spiritual beings. So again, the dangers here, I mean, this is, we get polarized because we get scared.
Mm.
And I know we wanted to cover this too. I just thought I'd bring it up. But what slows us down from this process, because we'll all get there, it's evolution. It is evolution.
Yes.
And they talk about hope. Evolution, yes, is our great hope.
Because people don't realize how important evolution really is. And the way you're describing it, it's key to the whole workings of the planet and the universe. And it's not something that should be argued about in political circles. It's a basic fact that we simply don't need to disbelieve or believe. We need to understand and experience, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, we need to see it. I mean, we can study physical evolution and we can see the changes going on through the different aspects of the animal, mineral, and plant kingdom. But it's much harder to see it in our own world, in our own lives. We can talk about a Gandhi or a Sai Baba or various teachers. Oh my gosh, look at this. They must be very evolved. But we haven't integrated this yet in mass thinking. It's slow. It's happening.
We talked about humanity's crises we're going through and the fears that it generates. But you had said there's two elements that you see, and that is polarization and fear of the future.
Everything that we need to learn right now is, in a sense, polarized so that we can really look at it, really understand it. Economics. Do we really want the super rich and millions of people starving when we're tossing food out? Is that the world we want? Do we want our social system breaking down into individual violence and group violence and misunderstandings and anger and vengeance? Is that what we want? Did that polarization? Yeah. And the political, the conservative, liberal, whatever that means, communist, capitalist, socialist, fascist, these are just words. I mean, at the end of the day, the key here, the end of this polarization will come when we can undersee ourselves finally, and I believe that Maitreya especially is going to help with this, see ourselves as one. Science says, hey guys, you're one, it's one field. You know, we influence each other, the butterfly in Borneo, the herd here. I mean, we know that already. We just need to experience it more.
And just one thing, Rondell, when you were mentioning communism and capitalism and socialism, they're all isms. And I think Benjamin Krem, the esotericist and author and artist, the sort of modern day John the Baptist who talked about Maitreya in the modern era, had, I'm not sure if he had quoted Maitreya as saying it or as he said it himself, that quote, isms in prison. And I think he had referred to them as like metaphysical drugs and to let go of them.
David, and, you know, I don't like to bring it up too much, but religion also has been a real problem for humanity for a long time. And that's part of the Aquarian dispensation, is that we're going to move from belief, you believe this or else, to wait a minute, what have you experienced? Well, what have you experienced? Well, let's have common ground here about our experience and see what really does invoke spiritual energies. What really does connect us to the Deva kingdom, connect us to each other in an energetic way, because we're moving into the age of energy. Doing Reiki, I mean, we all know it. This is the age of energy. So here we are.
And what was that again? You said this is the age of
energy.
Energy.
Yes.
And not just energy, but which I think you touched upon, is awareness and knowledge.
Yeah.
Because Pisces says, I believe. Aquarius says, I know, but go ahead.
Exactly. And that is so hard, because the ones who know in history have been isolated, either, you know, worshipped or killed or whatever, but usually isolated to various degrees.
Ostracized.
Now, yeah, exactly. And now we need, wait a minute, we need a big group of people. We need a mass of people to say, no, we're all experiencing this together. And I think the hope here in this polarization question lies with the young people who do not see the world so polarized as us older people do. And they're saying, no, are you kidding? We're all been together doing things for forever now. We're okay. We don't need your polarization. We can make things work.
Yes, you know, it seems like every older generation condemns the younger one, saying they're out of touch. But in this case, and of course that's gone on for hundreds of years and does yet still, but these young people are really in touch with these energies and with their desire to live and survive and thrive. And they don't seem to have the same hangups that the adults have or the older generation.
No, and in my experience, they're looking for meaning in their lives. They're looking for purpose. And I think shows like this and the materials that you and I are recommending to people give people a context that says, yes, there is meaning. There is purpose in your life. Don't give up. You know, it's so easy just to go into, you know, the dark side, but there's no need to right now.
I'd like to hear some more now about a little bit more about the fear of the future. Where does that come from and how do we work our way through that?
Well, it's ironic that over the past few years, we have had this media bombardment of fear. And at the same time, individually, everyone's going to therapy, trying to get rid of fears and move forward and get rid of addictions and so forth. So, but now with the physical lack of real security, the financial lack of real security, environmental collapse waiting in the wings, war waiting in the wings, possibly, that one fear is there a viable future for my children, for my grandchildren, for my friends? And so these fears are deep inside of us, but they are coming forward too, because people are saying, I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to create my own economy. I'm going to print my own money. I'm going to go back to trade and barter. I'm going to grow my own food. I'm not going to be stuck like my parents are in a system where they're terrified of leaving the system because there's nothing there to hold them up. We're going to hold each other up. These fears, and again, we're going to get into this a little bit later too, are connected to our past, to our historical past, our genetic past, our common trauma past, however you want to look at this. So these fears are deeply ingrained in us, which they're finding more and more evidence of, even generational, that you didn't experience the fear, but someone else did. And so it's part of your experience now. So this fear of the future is very deep. And with war, I mean, a lot of us grew up, you know, under desks waiting for an atomic explosion, which has, again, traumatized a generation. The fear that religion has caused by creating this image of hell and hellfire and damnation and the devil has, again, deep fears. Even people who want to do good, do certain things, they say, well, I don't know, maybe I need to cover myself here and be aware that I might go to hell if I do this. I mean, it's very insidious, very deep. And so that's why, today, most people call themselves spiritual and not religious.
Ah, that makes sense. And once again, I was looking for a couple examples. Something concrete happening today, like fear of Wall Street crash and fear of health crises, i.e. COVID. Wall Street and COVID, those are two solid examples of fear of the future right now. And I think some of our audience could relate to and say, wow, so that's what Ron's talking about. Now I can connect this metaphysical world and tale and background and detail with something solid that's happening today, and I can make that connection.
Well, really, we can see the seeds of this very clearly around the world with the new, they call them cities of light or spiritual communities, are starting all over now. And most of the people that I know are saying, hey, Ron, do you know of any I can join? This is a huge movement for people who become, because they're meditating, because they're doing help to the world, they're doing service, they're becoming more sensitive. And they feel things. My God, I don't even want to be in this room anymore. I don't want to be with these people anymore. I want to be in an environment that supports my growth. I want to be part of the solution. So they say, well, where can I live? And so they're saying, well, let's all live together. Let's create some kind of communal or community or whatever it is. They're all over the planet now in different ways people are doing this.
And
answer your question, yeah.
It seems like they're not just saying, I don't want to experience this anymore. That's toxic. But I don't want others to suffer and experience that anymore either. I'm not just thinking of myself anymore. I don't want anybody to go through what it is I don't like either.
Well, that's very true. And that's part of that, sensitivity creates responsibility. You literally respond more to the frequencies and vibrations of those around you. And by that process, we gradually, as a group, as humanity, become more harmless, because you say, oh my God, I said this and I can feel the other person's response. This wasn't good. Or I chopped down this tree and I can feel the trees going, it's very intense. And there's books about this. Many people have experienced this on many levels, but it's part of all of our heritage. We'll all be extremely sensitive. We'll be very responsible. That's part of, like you earlier talked about, what's our evolution? Well, that's the bellwether, sensitivity and responsibility.
And that seems really key. I like that phrase you used. What was it? Sensitivity creates
Responsibility. Yes.
Yeah.
Sensitivity creates responsibility. And I think a lot of people, at least I think so, haven't made the connection between those two. Now that we've gone over polarization and you've outlined how fear of the future has inhibited us and ways that we can overcome it, you've written about the phenomena of these two waves. And once again, to return to that great phrase you had, the divine purpose that is guiding us. Tell us about these two waves. I guess the first one was more the 60s going forward when it really started to become apparent. And the second wave would be freedom from the past.
Yeah, I was really privileged to be in a ringside seat for a lot of this, David, as you know. So again, these are, you know, more personal observations, but I hope, you know, people can relate to them somewhat. But, you know, the first part of this is exploring. Okay, you wake up one day and you say, I want to explore. This feeling of expansion was sweeping through the country. So you put your thumb out, you hitchhiked. You ended up at a strange place with strange people living in a house full of strangers that were all cooperating.
Oh, Ron, you just made me think of something. This expansion that you mentioned. Tie that into your phrase that I keep repeating that I like so much, the divine purpose that is guiding us. We're feeling the inclination to expansion. Where is that inclination for expansion coming from? What's the origin of it?
The origin is the spiritual influx of energies, which Maitreya has said, or Ben has said, that creates just by definition that yearning, divine discontent, because since it's literally shaking you out of your little mental box, and even, which I just mentioned here, exploring out of your physical box, your home in the suburbs or whatever it was, and then you say, okay, I want to get out of here, but where am I going? What do I need to do? And then we go from there to the books and the classes and the retreats and the study and all that. But that first sense, I want to explore, and that opened doors up. It created a sharing economy back in the 60s, a gig economy. I don't want to work every day. I'll work enough to do what I need to do my spiritual practices, to go to India, to go to Japan, whatever people were doing then. It gave them an opportunity to do that. And again, relating to fear, that energy pushed the fear away. You
stepped
them out. You said, oh, you can live in my house. And you didn't know the people at all, but you just did it. It was a physical wave. And I'm bringing this up not to go back into the past, but to say, okay, that was then. Now, what's the next on the spiral? I think just to finish that thought, the wave of the future now is a wave of spiritual energy that's impersonal. It's coming through the masters. It's definitely coming through the world teacher. And people that have been taking transmission meditation have certainly felt it. Other people around the world have felt it in various ways with various definitions and experiences. But it's a worldwide wave. From the early days of more individual waves, now we're getting this wave after wave affecting the planet, affecting young people. And so as we meditate, our mental processes become clearer to us. We understand ourselves better and the patterns of our thinking.
Well, Ron, I think we'll have to say, quoting Benjamin Krem, that's it. We've run out of time for this show. We want to thank all of you for sharing it with us. Go in peace. And let's all look forward to the future together. Thank you. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, David.
Visit us on Facebook at hashtag Planetary Makeover. This show has been a production of planetarymakeover.org.